Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast. 30 for 30 Podcast and The Undefeated present King of Crenshaw. This four-part series examines how Nipsey Hussle's life, death, and legacy impacted the sports world, particularly the NBA. Hear DeMar DeRozan, Isaiah Thomas, and DeMarcus Cousins, among others, explore the realities of life as a black man in America, Nipsey's dedication to South LA and his community, and how Nipsey inspired millions. The marathon continues. King of Crenshaw, listen now on SiriusXM, Pandora, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Also, the Peabody and Emmy Award-winning 30 for 30 film series presents Once Upon a Time in Queens, a four-part documentary event about the city, the swagger, and the wild ride of the 1986 Mets. This documentary explores the epic tale of one of baseball's most dominant and iconoclastic teams and their legendary World Series comeback. Hear from former Mets players and fans, including Daryl Strawberry, Keith Hernandez, Bill Burr, Cyndi Lauper, and more. All four parts of Once Upon a Time in Queens are available to stream on ESPN Plus and the ESPN app immediately. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is that time of week where we have a guest join us, and I can't tell no jokes about him not winning the trivia contest because he actually was not a participant. Check him out at Yahoo Sports covering the NBA. Vinny Goodwill, what's going on?
I wasn't smart enough to be in the trivia contest. That's what that was. You was asking. I was reading all them questions. I was like, who gets those?
I tell you this, though. If it had been the NBA trivia contest in particular, you are the betting favorite.
I think Nick might have won.
No, you beat Nick.
Really?
You beat Nick. You are absolutely the betting favorite.
I'll take it.
Nah, because I'd be hitting you, and I'd be like, okay, so yeah, Marvel feels dramatic, but it does kind of happen. Like, going back in time with things that they don't expect that I'd be old enough to know, and like, what happened at this game or whatever, you'd be kicking my ass at that stuff. Right? You'd be like, oh, yeah, no, that's not what happened in Game 5, then Game 6, Game 7. I'm like, yo, okay, got you.
I am the ultimate in the time machine. You asked me something that happened 2019 Game 5, I probably can't help you.
Right.
1988 Game 5, I probably got you. There's a difference here.
I will say, though, you could 2019 Game 5, I think you would know what happened in that.
Yeah, probably so.
If I'm not mistaken, you correct me if I'm wrong. In that, Kevin Durant gets hurt, but the Warriors still win? Or is that Game 4?
That's Game 5.
Okay. Game 5. There we go. See, that's what I'm saying. You knew it. You literally pulled that out your ass, and it was actually like, no, if I take a small moment and pause and give it some consideration, I can get to the bottom of it.
Yeah, it was a pause for dramatic effect.
There we go. Well played. Hey, man, I said this on Twitter yesterday, but really, I am really impressed right now by Ben Simmons and Rich Paul. And the reason I'm impressed by this is, Ben Simmons came out of Game 7 in the second round of the 2021 Eastern Conference semifinals, where the Hawks won the game in Philadelphia with a whole city ready to toss him overboard. And he has the nerve to say he don't want to play for them no more.
This is a relationship that needs to end. Right.
Yes.
This is one of those things where this is like a relationship analogy where, you know, somebody cheats and somebody has to go, right? But the person who has to go is the person who got cheated on, and you grab your bags. You like, you know what? I think it's time for me to leave you. Baby, I already left you. The new one is coming in.
Right. They're like, yo, you don't understand. Like, we're done too. We just haven't quite figured out exactly how to be done. But nah. Don't get this twisted, young homie. We don't want you back here neither. Like, they're all putting up the good face about it, but Simmons feels like he has been thrown under the bus by the Sixers. And the reports are he's not going to come to training camp, just to be clear. He feels he got thrown under the bus. It wasn't all his fault. And I'm inclined to believe that it was not all his fault. But whether you like it or not, at the level that he is at, if you don't come through in the ways that he didn't come through, you going to hear it. And that would be if he scored literally twice as many points as he did in Game 7. He would still have to answer for it.
Not just Game 7. This is a cumulative thing. I think he had one field goal in the fourth quarter of the last 5 games. Do you know how hard that is to do when you are a player who handles the ball and 9 times out of 10 you're going to play the entire fourth quarter? Think about it like this. If Doc Rivers, after game 7, says anything but, I don't know. If he says anything other than that, when they ask him, Doc, is Ben Simmons the championship point guard? If he says anything other than that, how different is the tone of this? Because the tone that they're taking is Doc Rivers threw him under the bus. The tone that they're saying is that they're pushing all the blame on Ben Simmons, right? Which I can see, but I'm not totally buying. Because to a large degree, they've protected Ben Simmons. You could almost say that they've coddled Ben Simmons. They didn't, I won't say that they coached him or empowered him, but they've coddled him. And I think there's a difference between coddling and empowering. You know what I mean? Especially someone like him who has a particular set of skills.
Right.
But the tone of all of this derives from Joel Embiid saying what he said, and they asked him, what's the turning point of the game? And Doc Rivers being asked and he being completely honest and saying, I don't know if Ben Simmons is a championship point guard. If they don't say that and they go to the company line and say, you know what, we're behind Ben and everything else, A, we blast them as media because we're going to out them as liars. But secondly, when it comes to this type of stuff, Ben Simmons is the total villain because it looks like the organization has had your back throughout this entire ordeal when they have not. And all of a sudden, you go and basically abandon ship. Now it just looks like, why would I want to play for y'all when y'all throw me under the bus? But why would they want him back anyway?
Dude, what were they supposed to say?
Exactly.
Like, the thing with Embiid, and I get why he handled it the way that he did, but I would also understand why somebody found it to be passive aggressive, is the way that he answered the question about the turning point was, there was a play when someone had a dunk and passed it up, right? And so I would understand why somebody would be like, say my name, if no one is around you. You know what I'm saying? Like, I would get where they were coming from on that. But what else were they supposed to do? Like, when LeBron melted down in the 2011 NBA Finals, what was so stunning about it was we had seen him prior to this put up some of the best clutch performances that we had ever seen, right? Mm-hmm. 2007 mm-hmm. against the Pistons would be a good example. Yep. I'd even say like 2008, game 5 against the Celtics, where he put up 45, right? Yep. Like, we had seen him come up when it was something that needed to be done.
Yep.
So it was strange, like when he comes out here and he scores 8 points and he doesn't want to give it to J.J. Barea and everything else. It's just like, yo, what in the world is going on here? The thing with Simmons is we haven't seen the high point yet, right? We haven't seen that, like, yo, but what about... You can't, but what about any of these performances that he's put up? You just can't. Have we ever seen a player this good with as little interest in taking shots? Generally, a player as good as he is, even if he's like primarily a defensive player, you got to go have a talk with that person and be like, hey, man, I understand why it is that you want to do all this shooting, but that ain't really what you about.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They have to have the other talk with Ben Simmons. And I just, like, I'm trying to figure out for him, where did that come from? Like, when did you decide I'm not shooting anything outside of 3-4 feet?
Clearly, it's a mental thing. It could be a mechanical thing, and some people I've talked to in the league suggest that they've never taken him and sort of broken the shot down and worked with him and said, hey, we're going to build this thing, you know, from the ground up, from base to release. I don't know if that's necessarily the case, but the fact that I think that Ben Simmons is just hard-headed. And, Bo, you know this. I have a 3-year-old nephew. My 3-year-old nephew is one of the smartest 3-year-olds I've ever been around. And I've been around a lot of kids. And not because he says anything particularly profound. He doesn't. He's actually pretty quiet. But the fact that he goes out of his way not to say something until he absolutely has to lets me know that it's in there. Lets me know that the wheels are turning. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I'll give you a perfect example. It's during the finals. I'm on NBA TV. My nephew has this thing where he doesn't call me by my name when I'm around. Or he had this thing where he wouldn't call me by my name. He would kind of run from me. They see me on TV. My sister asks him, who is that? He says, oh, that's Uncle Vinny. So she says, oh, okay, so you know who he is. So then like 5 minutes later, I'm on the TV screen again. She has her phone up this time. She wants to prove a point. She says, who's down the screen? And he looks at her with a glare. Like, I already told you who that was. Don't be doing this for show. That's Ben Simmons. I can shoot. I have the ability to shoot. The more y'all tell me that I should shoot is the more I'm going to dig into this and prove to y'all that I can be an impact player without shooting. To me, that's what this all comes down to, is the guy who wants to be right as opposed to the guy that wants to sort of fit into everything. Like, this is really, I don't know about you, Bo, I find this really fascinating from the standpoint of, like, think about all the stuff the 76ers did. From the point that they drafted him, think about it. The next year, they could have took Tatum, but they took Fultz.
Yeah.
And did not know that Ben Simmons was going to demand to play point guard. That leads you to the Fultz conundrum. That leads you to trading Fultz for cap space. That leads you to, you could say, overpaying for Tobias Harris, not giving Jimmy Butler what he wanted, keeping Brett Brown, then firing him. All of that is almost in direct response to Ben Simmons and not Joel Embiid. Everything, especially the Tatum pick.
Yeah, because I thought that when that came down that, well, one, I always had the question, because Simmons and Embiid play together. And then when it came down to who to take, Simmons or Ingram, I was like, well, if you had to ask me which is a better player, I'd probably still say Ben Simmons, right? Like, even in spite of what I've seen. But I thought that Ingram would have wound up being a better fit for the roster that they had. And I did think that they, at some point, had to start thinking about not just accumulating pieces, but making sure that the pieces fit around each other. That was what I thought. And in the Fultz draft, I was like, yo, you got to give a real look to Tatum. Like, I thought the Celtics also had to give, like, the real look to Tatum, and obviously they did. When they had the number one pick, I'm like, if you're the Celtics, you take Jason Tatum. Fultz was tricky for a lot of us because his team was sorry and they played in the Pacific time zone. People ain't watched that dude, man. They was just out here telling. That's just what that come down to. They was just out here jibber-jabbering about that. But it was always a how exactly do we make this sort of roster thing fit. But Simmons came out as a rookie and balled. He was really, really good. Mm-hmm. But he's so clearly terrified now. And does he not know that we know that? Because I remember in the press conference after the game 7, I don't want to say that he was contrite. I don't know if that feels like the wrong word. But it did feel like that he was owning a measure of, hey, I got to get better, you know, all of that stuff. And then I remember later in the press conference, he hit him with something like, well, what did I do, right? Mm-hmm. It was like, how many rebounds? How many assists? I can't remember exactly what it was. Yeah. I think you remember what I'm talking about. Yep. And then when the answer came back, he was like, right. And I was like, oh, no, this is never going to work. Like, you're not going to get this. And so there's no way he doesn't know that he's shook when he's out there. There's no way that he doesn't know that there's a problem. And then there's another part of him that just kind of jumps up and has to be like, but it ain't my fault, though. Like, that's saying something different. And I don't get the feeling that if you ask LeBron after 2011, if it was his fault, that he would tell you no.
Well, you said it. You said it already. LeBron had a measure of success before 2011. So he knew he could always come back to that. Like, this wasn't going to necessarily, like, define him. What is Ben Simmons' defining moment as an NBA player? Can you name the defining moment where you can say that he took over a game when it really, really mattered in a game of consequence? Maybe that game that me, you, and your brother were at in Brooklyn?
Yeah.
Where he went at it with who? Jared Dudley?
Yes,
like,
yes,
that
he
is
did.
Your claim to fame at this point? A dude who's not an assistant coach with the Dallas Mavericks? That's your claim to fame? That is your shining Sterling NBA moment?
What was that? Was game 3 or game 4? Embiid was still sick as a dog. It was game 4. Because game 3, Simmons balled without Embiid, and suddenly Embiid could play. He got out there and he was sick and he was hobbled and was still a paint vortex.
Now, here's my other thing about Simmons. I'm going to see if you agree with me on this one. Ben Simmons is the type of player that has to be either your best player or your number three, right?
Something to that.
Your best player being, I'll explain this, you know, for the audience. Your best player means everything is built around your team. You know, the number one guy, everything is considered around your guy's skill set. So even if he can't shoot, won't shoot, which is basically his middle name right now, then you bring shooters around him. You bring people who can accentuate that other stuff. The floor will be spread. You will have a couple stretch shooting bigs and everything else. And you can take them off the ball a little bit. You'll probably have a, you know, like a, I hate to say, like a Craig Hodges type of point guard who can, you know, basically just shoot, right? Seth Curry would be your point guard. If he's your third best player, you don't need him every night. Your first and second best players are there. You are there to plug in the holes. You are there to do all the little things that your first and second best guys don't do. Not to say like Chris Bosh, but you're not being as considered on a daily basis to perform like your one and two. If he's your second best player, that is a disaster for someone like him. Because pretty much we are building around Joel Embiid. Joel Embiid needs shooting. What will you refuse to do? Shoot. What do you refuse to give Joel Embiid? Space. And you two jokers are young. So basically this turns into, that wasn't just Joel Embiid's ego. It's Ben Simmons' ego in this too. You know what I mean? These two young dudes that want to have all this space, quietly battling on social media over who's dating who and all this other type of stuff. It's a lot of that jealousy, you know what I mean, that I think exists between both guys, and Joel Embiid won out. So Ben Simmons is like, nah, all right, cool. Y'all chose him. I gotta go.
Yeah, and like Paul George is the guy like that where I asked that question, whether or not he just can't be your number two. He was the number one in the playoffs last year, and he looked great. Number yes. two, we clown him.
Dude, we will never give Paul George any country as a number two. They might be the Seattle Clippers if we relying on Paul George to be a legit number two, even though he has the skill set to be a number two. I can't believe I'm going to say this as I sit here from a Detroit area residence. He has a skill set to be Pippen-like.
But a much better offensive scoring threat.
Absolutely.
Like, Pippen's a better playmaker, but he is a like, you can ask Paul George to go get you some buckets. That's just not something that you request to Scottie Pippen.
Like, you can ask Paul George before the game, Paul, we need 30 from you. And Paul says, okay. And we saw how that played out. With a guy like Ben Simmons, what are you asking Ben Simmons on a night to give you besides, hey, man, can you defend? Can you rebound? Can you distribute? Which is what he was saying in that press conference. You know, what did Trae Young shoot? What did, you know, how many rebounds did I get? That's not what we asking, bro. This ain't about the stat sheet, man. That's the thing. So when you say, yeah, he knew that he was shook, yeah, but the one thing he ain't going to do is show us that he shook. That hubris is a mother. And he ain't giving us that country because he watch. I bet you he reads everything, watches everything, and all that type of stuff. My problem is, if you play for Team Clutch, how come LeBron ain't got in your ear? I'm just saying.
This is interesting because Team Clutch is a big part of this. Did you see that story? I think it was in Philly Voice. Kyle Newbeck wrote, and basically the Sixers look at this as Rich Paul is giving you bad advice.
Yes.
And see, to me,
it's easy to blame the agent. It's so easy to blame Rich Paul.
It's easy to blame him, but I don't think that the I'm not coming to camp strategy is a good idea. Like, even James Harden went to camp. And then, you know, ultimately they wound up making the move. But I don't think Simmons not going to camp is going to accelerate this process. Like, what does that do at worst? So let's say the Sixers play the first month of the season without Ben Simmons. Let's just say that. Let's say their record is a little over 500. I think that's a reasonable record. Like, Embiid by himself should get you to 500,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely.
You know, let's say they're a little over 500. Dog, it don't matter what this team is at the beginning of December. It don't even matter what this team is at the end of January. It matters what this team is in the middle of February. Matters what this team is in the middle of April. And if you're lucky, it matters what this team is in the middle of June. But it does not matter what this team is at the beginning of the season. It just doesn't. So that's why I ask, what exactly are you getting out of this holdout? Like, or maybe, to be fair to Rich, maybe they went to the Sixers and said, hey, man, it's time for a change. And the Sixers are like, yeah, we'll see about that. You know, maybe that's the thing that happened. I don't know. But Daryl Morey is one of these guys. This is my read on things. Daryl Morey is one of these guys who is a little petrified of Rich Paul.
Why is that? Why would you say such a thing?
I'll just say this. There is a story that has come out in the last year or so, give or take, with a money anonymous quote that I would bet the house was Daryl Morey talking Rich Paul is the biggest problem in the NBA and da-da-da and all of this stuff. Like, I don't think that Daryl wants to bend to the will of Rich Paul in this, but I also think where Daryl's in a trick bag is, I got a lot of criticisms of Daryl, but he ain't stupid, right? And so they wound up in a situation in Oklahoma City where basically they decided we need to get James Harden out of here before training camp. They made that call. Daryl Morey, always ready for you to be desperate, was like, hey guys, what's going on? And basically got James Harden for the last year of Kevin Martin's contract, a draft pick that turned into Steven Adams, and what was it, Jeremy Lamb?
Jeremy Lamb, yep.
Yeah, but that was basically what they got for James Harden because of that situation. Now, Daryl Morey is in the position that Sam Presti was in 2012 when that move had to be made, right? And my read on that Harden trade always has been, I get why people say that the Thunder got fleeced, and there's obviously a strong argument for it. But Sam Presti made the hard decision. This was not going to carry. Like, I think that's my big point.
Gabe, I need the music.
Thank you for your patience. A representative from the right time will be with you shortly. Your current hold time is
15 seconds.
Yeah, he had to go. He had to go, right? And that was the thing. Like I say, Presti's not a moron, but sometimes you look up and it's like, yo, man, this dude got to go. And that's where they are with Simmons. Yo, man, this dude got to go, but Morey is not willing to swallow that L like Presti was willing to. And by the way, for Presti, I don't care what nobody says about it. It worked out okay. Like, it didn't work out as well as people think it could have, but health was the biggest problem that they had. They were the best team in the West that next year without James Harden.
The question is, in hindsight, and this is really unfair to Sam Presti, the question is, do you trade Russ instead of Harden?
That's what it is that people have misunderstood this. The decision they made was the decision to keep Russell Westbrook. Mm-hmm. And my read on this and what people have told me is that that was kind of a no-brainer decision at the time because, one, when they made the decision, Harden hadn't broken out. But the other part was, which one of them always on time? Which one of them always plays hard? Like, if you are talking about building a culture, which was important for them because they just had all them young dudes. Mm-hmm. If that's what you cared about, no question which one of them you kept. You kept Russell Westbrook.
Except the dude that put the San Antonio Spurs out.
Yes, you're correct. I get it. And the guy who didn't show up in the NBA Finals. And he's the same dude as the dude that wrecked the Spurs.
He did show up in the NBA Finals.
Well, he showed just up. Not at the arena.
Just not at the arena.
He was in Miami, though.
He was outside, as the kids would say.
James Harden probably looked back at the 2012 Finals and be like, nah, man, that was a great 2 weeks. Oh, yeah, that's right. We did lose. But, I mean, it's about more than that. You know what I'm saying?
The only thing he was missing was a pair of Trina's lips on his neck. If you know, you know. No, I think for Ben Simmons, everything about him, that doesn't strike me as Rich Paul. That strikes me as Ben Simmons, him not coming to camp. If Ben Simmons don't want to shoot, right, what makes you think he wants to face his teammates? What makes you think he wants to deal with all that discomfort in the meantime? Nothing tells me, and it's almost like a bad marriage where Doc Rivers is not necessarily in the people business anymore. We think of Doc Rivers as being in the people business, but Paul George and now Ben Simmons, maybe he's not as much, or there's a certain type that Doc Rivers can really, really reach, and Ben Simmons ain't it. Daryl Morey, we know he's not in the people business. We know he don't care about nobody being uncomfortable because he ain't got to answer these questions. He ain't got to stand out front and deal with none of this stuff for the first month. Why is Ben Simmons here? Why is he not here? Why haven't you traded him? That's for Doc Rivers and Joel Embiid. The only way that this is going to work, this trade is going to happen, if Joel Embiid walks in and says, I'm tired of being asked these questions. Y'all need to figure this out and figure this out right now before I get upset. Even if he got the contract extension that he's got, you don't want your best player upset at the franchise for doing, lack of a better phrase, dumbass shit. You know what I mean? We gonna hold out for the best possible deal. Nah, man, we need to get you up out of here yesterday.
My read, the only way Embiid signs that extension is if they've come to an understanding of what they're going to do about Simmons. If I'm repping Embiid, we're not signing this extension until we come to some understanding about this, what this is going to be. And maybe they tell Embiid, it's going to take a little while, but, like, we want to do this. We're going to do this. We just can't do it right now. And you explain to him, we can't do this because it's going to make the team worse, and we're not going to be championship caliber if we rush this. All right, I got you. You go ahead. You signed a deal. I mean, Embiid coming up, what was it, meniscus tear that he had when he was out there? Yeah, okay, go ahead and sign that. I would get on that pronto if I were him. Okay, cool. We go ahead and do it. Simmons, what do you give up for him? What does he do for whatever the team is that he happens to be on? Like, I don't have the answers to any of those questions. I have no idea what you should be willing to do with him. I don't have a great idea of who you put around him, because we're talking about you surround him with shooters, but is Ben Simmons really the best player on a championship team? Like, Ben Simmons, treating him basically like Hakeem Olajuwon or Giannis, according to this, where we're going to just kind of make you a post player of sorts and surround you with shooters. Is he that good? Is he that guy? And if you do that, can you also play a legitimate top flight rim protector on the floor with him at the same time to allow you to have the kind of defense that you need to have to win a championship? Because unless it's Karl Towns, and he's not a great rim protector, but you get my point, you know? So how do you do this?
I talked to three high-level talent evaluators that I trust in the past 48 hours, and I was feeling like you. And they said to me, literally, it was almost like they was reading from a script. One is a GM, another's a VP for different teams at different levels. And he says, I could do this job for another 10 years, and I would not be able to get my hands on a Ben Simmons. That's why I consider trading for him. You know what I mean? He prefaced it by saying, I wouldn't trade for him because all the intel on him came back bad. The intel came back on him as saying he's not a worker and he's Hollywood. He was like, I can deal with the Hollywood stuff. I can't deal with you not being a worker with the team that I have. You know what I mean? The other guy was like, that's a Doc and Daryl problem more than it is a Ben Simmons problem. I love his talent. I would love to be able to build around him, but they have jacked him up so much that him just getting a fresh start is going to do wonders for him. Now, the question is, what do you play him as? Because he's not a point guard anymore. If he's not shooting, Bo, he's not a point guard. So right. You're playing him at 3-4. If you're playing him at 3-4 and you're getting him downhill, cool, because he's going to be at a quickness and speed advantage over anybody he's playing against, you know, by and large. Maybe the exception of like a LeBron or, you know, a guy here or there, or Giannis here or there. But he's in the same mold as a Giannis. He's not as imposing physically. Like, Giannis is bigger, stronger, longer, or whatever, but they're in the same mold. He's just afraid to be embarrassed, where Giannis is not afraid be embarrassed at all. He will stand at the line for 20 seconds until they blow that whistle. You know what I mean? He's going to do what he does. I don't know if that changes with Ben Simmons having a change of scenery, but I do think that he's better with a change of scenery. I'll throw this at you, Bo. Who's the best player you can trade for Ben Simmons?
Like, if you went straight up?
Yeah, because that's what it comes down to. You're not going to get, even if it's a combination, to me, it comes down to, for Philly, it comes down to who's the best player you're getting for him. Because those draft picks ain't going to pan out when you're trying to win right now.
Well, see, that's where it gets interesting. It is very rare that a team needs to liquidate a player like Ben Simmons while also competing for a championship. Like, normally, if you got a dude as good as Ben Simmons and you're saying, yo, we got to trade him, it's because we need to start this whole thing over and rebuild, mm-hmm. and all we need is some mm-hmm. stuff for the future. And you know me, I do not believe that you can adequately play for now and play for later at the same time. You kind of got to make a call on which one you're going to do. But you can't get better by trading him. So, I don't see any way that they can legitimately get better by trading him. So, like, let's say that they made a trade with him that involves sending him to Portland,
mm-hmm.
and CJ McCollum is the best player who mm-hmm. comes back.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make them better?
I don't know if it makes them better. Here's the thing. It could very well make them better, but it doesn't mean that they'll be any further past the second round of the Eastern Conference semifinals. Because the East is better. It's not about you being better. It's about everything around you being better. I think, let's say, CJ McCollum, John Wall, I'm trying to think, Buddy Hield, someone like that. Those are a combination of the three best players you can get for Ben Simmons. Who would you take?
Wow. That's a great question.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. I don't know how they're supposed to win. Like, I don't know what they're supposed to do. I would push back on the it's a Doc and Daryl problem, and not that Doc and Daryl have been positive contributors to the situation, but this is where it was headed for a while.
Yep.
Like, so what, if Brett Brown was there,
mm-hmm.
we wouldn't have these same problems? That what this is? If it was Brett Brown and Brian Colangelo, that you would not have these problems? See, I don't believe that. This is about a very unique one guy, and nobody quite knows what exactly to do with him. And oh, by the way, and you just mentioned it, as we look at what the East is going to be next year, which... kind of monstrous when you think about it, like coming off the playoffs that we just had, mm-hmm. like it almost feels like talking about the East next year is kind of the way that you talk about like a college team, whether it be football or basketball, based on how the postseason went the year before. And you'd be like, oh yeah, yo, but Alabama bringing back 19 starters, you know, or something like that. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about the defending champions, right? Yep. And if there's anything I feel like I've learned, I can only point to one team ever on any level that I felt like won a championship, and then that didn't matter for years down the line. And I mean positively, like, yo, they became champions and they took it up a notch because they were champions. The only team I could think of that didn't do that was the Mavericks in 2011, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But the Bucks, as good as they've been the last 3-4 years, and now they're champions. Okay, we got that. The Nets in year two, where they didn't even really get to play together in year one. Okay, we got that. The upstart Atlanta Hawks. Okay, we got that. And then when you start talking lower in the conference, Chicago's not going to be great or anything, but like Chicago's going to be better. Indiana should be better, right? Like they should be healthier. They got Caris LeVert in that trade, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm, like mm-hmm. They should be better. We didn't even talk about the Heat, who got a lot better. We didn't even mention the Celtics, where I don't know what exactly they're going to be, but you ain't going to want to play them on a given night.
No, you're not. No, you're not. The East will be cracking. And let me tell you, as someone who spent time in Atlanta during the Eastern Conference Finals.
You ready to go back?
Absolutely.
Yeah, let me tell you this about Atlanta right now.
Well, wait, maybe not. Maybe not.
I was about to say, it used to be that Delta ran Atlanta. And you know who's running Atlanta now? Somebody different. Delta.
Bruh. I was there, and I don't know if we talked about this on the last time we did this podcast. It was the UFC fight the night before the Eastern Conference Finals at State Farm. So I want to say it was two Americas, but let's just say it was two Black Americas down there at the hotel I was at. And I was like, why am I staying here when it's all this neon and orange and all of that? But the next night at the arena during game three, game four, whatever it was, oh, back to life.
Yeah, I believe. Just hope you had a mask on, my dude.
Absolutely.
Man, I did something last night. I had to do a little event, and a buddy of mine came to town. He lives in Texas. And so we were headed out after the event, and we're leaving the building. And so now that we're leaving the building, you know, got my mask on. Because in New York, you got to show proof of vaccination to get in and all that stuff.
Yep.
So I put my mask on. Everybody else in the elevator got their mask on. My man who lives in Texas was like, oh man, this ain't Texas. I guess I need to put my mask on. But the moral of the story is, if you tell people they're supposed to do it, all it's going to take is one or two other people to do it. And then the other person, oh, that's right. That's what we do here. And then they're going to fall in line. Atlanta, like, ain't nobody say we got to do this. Delta running these streets.
Hey, man. Natural selection, man. If you get it, you get it. We going to be out here doing this. Like, I think you made this a point to me the other day. The only reason that people wasn't going to stuff was because we said people couldn't go to stuff.
Yeah.
Atlanta didn't have that. So, not to your point, Atlanta and Miami are now cracking in the Eastern Conference. Ooh. I will be careful, but I will be outside.
Yeah, we need to fix the world. Yeah. Wish you the best on that, homie. Like I say, everybody, just be careful.
Not outside. But let's just say, because the only time it really matters, Bo, is January and June, right? Yeah. January, because it's cold everywhere else and you're trying to get a break. June, for very obvious reasons.
Yeah, right? Hold another ball game. I'm trying to think what else. Ben Simmons accidentally got us in here to do like an NBA preview on this or whatever.
It's a little early for an NBA preview, I feel like.
Yeah, we're not there yet. But I will say, Rich made sure whoever was decided to put this word out, they was going to get the word out now. They wanted it known now. Ben Simmons is not coming to training camp. And part of what makes that interesting is, if Ben Simmons just hadn't showed up and nobody said anything outside of NBA Twitter, would anybody know? Because nobody cares about NBA training camp. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's just not a thing that people really pay a great deal of attention to. If Ben Simmons just had been late, NFL going on, if they had put this out on a Saturday night during the NFL season, I might not even know he ain't coming.
News dump. I mean, here's the other part of it. Curious what you think, Bo. If you're the 76ers, are you finding Ben Simmons?
There's no point. You can, but it's not going to do anything. Because what it does is, you find Ben Simmons, it allows him to just put his middle finger right in your eye, right? Like, we'll have Ben Simmons on his Instagram story just literally setting money on fire.
Now, and because someone brought that up to me yesterday, like, well, they should fine him. You don't come to work, you know, have a backbone. I'm like, yeah, but that ain't how this NBA works. And that ain't going to help you make a trade. Here's the thing. If the over-under on a Ben Simmons trade is Christmas, what are you taking?
Before. I think it'll be untenable. Like, because the season starts in the middle of October.
Right.
I don't know if they can live with 2 months like this, one way or another. Because as much as I say this, if they do start losing without Simmons, I say that the losses themselves don't matter, but don't nobody feel like being on a team that's losing, right? Like, nobody wants any part of that. So if they go out there and they start losing, trading Ben Simmons is not going to make them better than they would be with Ben Simmons, but trading Ben Simmons will make them better than they would be without Ben Simmons.
Mm-hmm.
So if he's not going to play, then they're going to have to wind up making a move. Daryl going to have to swallow some pride on this one, man.
Yes, he is.
Or get the pieces and try to turn it into something by February.
Well, see, here's the thing. The only way he trades Ben Simmons for parts is if he has another move on the back end.
Right.
Daryl Morey is the guy that is desperately waiting. Let's just be honest. He's waiting on Damian Lillard to come out and say, hey, y'all, it's been real. See you, Portland. Except I don't think that's going to happen this year or no time like in the immediate future. And if he does say, I want out, you know the place that he's not going?
Right.
He ain't going to Philly.
He ain't going to. I feel very confident that I know the one place that if Damian Lillard asks out, that he going to be trying to come.
Does it have a correlation with Snoop Dogg coming in and crushing the buildings?
Yes, I'm saying he coming right here. If he want to go somewhere, New York City right now is wide open for the superstar who wants to do it. Right, like if you make that decision that you want to be that guy, you can come here and look, it would help if you won a championship. But if you just give them some great games in the garden, I can't explain to people what you will be in this city if that happens. Like, this is the thing to realize, I think, about the Knicks with New York that's easy to forget, which is the Knicks were the only thing that everybody had in common. And even to this day, I still say that because the Nets just don't have a foothold yet, right? Like, Nets fans are fans who were Nets fans when they were in New Jersey, right? You know, like, they still don't have that thing going in that way. But in the times of me walking around this city and, you know, people stopping me to talk about stuff, maybe somebody will ask me about the Giants, but not really, right?
Mm-hmm.
We had a lot of people in the offices who rooted for the Jets, but I'm talking about, like, stopping me on the street to talk. Nobody really stops me on the street to ask me any questions about them. Even when they were terrible, they want to know about the Knicks. That is the thing. They're just like, can you give me any reason to have a glimmer of hope? Right? Like, these unrealistic expectations of what they're going to be, I really think a lot of that got beaten out of people. They just want some reason to have some measure of hope. And the thing about Dame is that's different than Melo. Melo was willing to come here and handle the weight of all the media stuff and take that well, the losing and things like that, endure that. Like, he was great for what they happened to be at that time. Dame is here for the weight of, let me take you to the promised land. I got you. Let's roll. And it's been a long time since they had a dude like that here, and they will love it, and he know that.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, Adidas knows that. Mm-hmm. You know, the records, look, he's into the rap. He's got a flow. Hey, damn, we got studios everywhere in New York City. You don't got to have this at your crib. You can go to some of these places where, you know, where people are at. You know what I mean? Here's the thing about New York City or the Knicks themselves. Not New York, but the Knicks. I don't know how great Patrick Ewing really was, right? But the way people tell it, you would think he was better than Hakeem, David Robinson, Shaq. And it's only because of New York City and the Knicks. And if you get Dame across from KD and Harden and Kyrie, he's like, oh, yeah. Some dudes will come play with me.
Right. Honestly, that'll be the thing to make Knicks fans care about the Nets. Because right now, I would not care about the Nets if I'm a Knicks fan because we can't hang. We just don't have the dudes. And you're not going to be like we trying to overcome little brother. Like, you're not going to get to that point.
Right.
But give the Knicks a dude. Right? Give the Knicks that guy and be like, all right, let's go do this. This place will be on fire. And my understanding is, especially in a lot of these young dudes around the league, they saw the playoffs. They saw the garden. They saw what it was. And they want that. They want a piece of that. They want to be a part of that. And look, man, World Wide West kind of aged out of being the number one power broker, right? Like, his guys just weren't players anymore.
Right.
They kind of moved on, right? His relationship with LeBron wasn't what it was because LeBron ain't need, you know, all that stuff. He's still Wes. He still got all the game in the world. Leon Rose still got all the contacts that he had from being at CAA. They going to get a dude.
You got to think Scott Perry was a guy who was part of the whole Fab Five thing. You know what I mean? Like, they got dudes that know how to talk to people. People still are enamored with Wes. Like, there's the mystique of, hey, man, Worldwide, I saw Worldwide Wes in the hall. You know what I mean? And, you know, there were some people around the league that didn't like how Worldwide Wes comported himself last year, you know, behind closed doors, because it wasn't people in the arenas and all that type of stuff. And they complained to the league, and the league was like, yeah, okay, and so what? You know what I mean? So they're still, put it like this, you ain't complaining about Worldwide Wes if Worldwide Wes ain't an actual threat.
Right.
You ain't saying nothing if he's just some dude with no game and no charisma. You know what I mean? He can still open his phone and say, hey, man, you want to talk to Mike? I can call him. You know what I mean? Like, it's that type of thing. If you're the Knicks, you can tell me if I'm wrong. The way that some of these other endorsement things work, I'm betting there's a difference in playing for the Knicks compared to playing for the Nets. If nothing else, just being on 33rd. You know what I mean? Just the location of Madison Square Garden in proximity to these other joints.
Dude, the Knicks matter in a way that the Nets just don't. The Nets is something new. The Nets are honestly like any other, like the Arizona Cardinals in 1997 or any team that just moved somewhere.
Right.
Like, that's what they are. It takes a generation to actually build up and like have some fans. And I guess the Nets fans are gonna wind up being the children of transplants who live in Brooklyn. You know what I mean? That they have a Brooklyn attachment, but they don't have somebody in their house that's indoctrinating them into, you know, the family business or rooting for the Knicks. Like, that's the math I got. Like, that's how it winds up going. But no, I would not be surprised if Dame Lillard wound up trying to get himself to New York as the place. You're right, it ain't gonna be I want to go to Philly. And, you know, and the Sixers feel like they on the clock because Embiid and that knee, or just his body in general, they're like, yo, we got an MVP caliber player. Mm-hmm. We got to figure this out right now, and there is no right now answer. Good luck, guys.
Put like this last thing about Knicks fans and Nets fans. People don't know a life without the New York Knicks. They don't know what life was like without the New York Knicks giving them misery. People have been around. Like, oh, the Nets? I remember when the Nets wasn't here. Like, it takes that long for you to remember when the Nets weren't a thing for your fan base to really mean something. And in New York, it's just too much stuff to do for you to be indoctrinated that quick, especially with where they are. You know what I mean? In Brooklyn and everything else. But it ain't 33rd and 6th, man.
No. Like, one thing the Clippers had going for them, you know, they still share the arena, but while they were sharing the arena is, the thing about the Clippers was, you could go see a good game for relatively cheap, and it was just as easy to get there as it was to get to a Lakers game because they played in the same building, right? Like, I saw that first year of the Heat at, at Staples. Just go see a Clippers game, right? Like, you can just get in there. Being at Barclays, it's cool if you live down there, but I'm just telling you, you live up here, you live in the Bronx, you live in Manhattan, hell, you live in Queens. Ain't no real getting there, dog. It's not, that's far.
Dude, it took me an hour. When I lived in Jersey, it took me an hour and a half to get to Brooklyn. It took me 30 minutes to get to MSG. Where you think I'm going for my courtesy? I'm going to MSG, even if it is a better game at Barclays. Bro, I don't feel like jumping on 2, 3, 4 trains and all that type of stuff. And then now, in the age of the post-COVID, what we consider the post-COVID?
Ain't no post. COVID ain't run no post route, man. COVID still running a go. COVID is running a 9 route. COVID trying to take it to the house.
I thought you brought me on here to talk about the mediocrity greatness that is Matthew Stafford.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I was to say, you in Detroit. I can't believe we come over here to talk about basketball. You want to pick on the Lions.
Ain't that so easy?
Damn.
I'm picking on the Lions and Matthew Stafford. Like, here it's like, you know, what side are you on? Are you on the side of the Lions or are you on the side of Matthew Stafford? I ain't on the side of either one of them. They deserved each other. Matthew Stafford going to give you some really great throws and some really bonehead ones. And here's the thing, but I'm waiting on. I'm waiting on the media fawning to stop. What point is it going to be that Matthew Stafford is not going to be everybody's darling, you know, for the Rams right now? How long are you going to give it?
I have no idea, because he is the least scrutinized number one overall pick
ever
in the history of the NFL.
Ever.
Period. There's never been a number one overall pick at quarterback who could quarterback a team and not win a playoff game in 12 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
Just never been one. Never been one. It's just him. I don't know why he did not win in college. He was disappointing in college. He's been disappointing. I'm not saying he's bad, but he's been disappointing. I guess he's a young 32 or 33. You know, like he just needs a little more time to get it right.
That's it. He just needs the right people, the right things around him. Like the Lions didn't go and do everything around him. You know, I mean, Calvin Johnson ain't two receivers, but Calvin Johnson is one.
Yes. Oh, boy. Sorry about that, Lions fans. I wish you the best. Now, that's my man, Vinny Goodwill. Check him out, Yahoo Sports, covering the NBA. My man, I greatly appreciate you.
Oh, yeah. Always fun, brother. We got to argue about the 75 coming up soon.
Yes. Hey, let me know. Because when they put out that list, that's the only list I'm willing to argue about. I'm out of the list business. But when they come up with the top 75 NBA players, yeah, we'll have to come on here and do
opening it. Opening week. It's opening week, I think.
Oh, gosh. We'll have to do it. Damn it.
What happens when Carmelo doesn't make the list?
Ooh. Ooh, 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 it's a good question, though.
When Dwight Howard makes it and Carmelo doesn't.
Yo, because the 50, when you really go back and look at it, they did good work on the 50. There aren't really a lot. Like, there's some judgment calls. Like, Shaq after 5 years, Bill Walton is, I see your argument, though I would not do it. There was one more. Scottie Pippen.
Mm-hmm.
Right, like, the 50 was tricked. The 75... because there have been so many good players that have come into the league in the last 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, ooh.
It's going to be fun.
Ooh, ooh, ooh. Already looking forward to it. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this 3 times a week. Gabe Bassan and Dave Presley handling everything behind the scenes. Thank you, gentlemen. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.